Well, I think we'll go ahead and get started so we'll give our panelists adequate time. Good morning. Are you surviving APHA okay so far? Hey, Mary. We see a lot of good friends in the room and some new faces as well, so hopefully we'll engage in a lively conversation. At least I like to engage in lively conversations about accreditation, and I know our panelists do as well. How many of you work in a health department? How many of you have worked in a health department? Okay. So that looks like almost 100% of the folks at least one time or another have had a formal affiliation with a health department. So have you heard that health departments are a conglomeration or a grouping of programmatic activities? Have you ever heard that? Do you think to some extent that's true? Sure. Yeah, I know at FAB, as we've initiated the Public Health Accreditation Program, we're looking at the foundation upon which those programs rest. But it is true that health departments carry out services that are related to what we call public health programs. So what we want to talk about today is how those two come together. As the president and CEO of FAB, I and my staff get asked very often, what is your connection with programs? Don't you know that we are funded to do categorical programs? Yes, we do know that. And so part of the focus, most of the focus of this presentation today is to talk about how accreditation and the selected public health programs that will be talked about come together to make up not only what we do in public health, but what we improve about what we do in public health. So you're going to really enjoy this presentation. Before I introduce our panelists, I want to acknowledge FAB has a board member in the room. Dr. Rex Archer is a member of our board of directors. And so when we get to the questions, you can ask him all of the questions. And I'll get to be off the hook a little bit. Several of you in the room serve on various committees or as site visitors for FAB. Some of you have gone through the accreditation process and survived. And so we'll let you speak to that when we get to questions and answers as well. But thank you for being here. I want to talk a little bit. So I'm not actually going to speak. I know for you that's probably a surprise. It's very hard for me not to talk. My job is to moderate, and we'll have a lot of fun when we get to the question and answer period. But you are going to hear from three folks from CDC who have been great partners to FAB and also who have done a lot of work to look at how FAB's standards and measures, the accreditation process, and the programmatic expectations and the evidence for the programmatic expectations all come together. So we'll talk just a little bit about what's going on with FAB, but in the next session, we're going to talk about it a lot more. So if you want to stay around for the 12:30 session, we're right across the hall in the Otis room. Then we're going to talk about the connection to public health programs, what's going on in the field with that, and then the connection to evidence-based practice. And you're going to get to leave with a wonderful handout that will tell you about it if you haven't picked it up already. So I introduced you to Dr. Rex Archer, who's on our board, and just entering the room is the chair of our board, Carol Morley. Hi, Carol. You can't get off the hook. And so I'm on the hot seat a little bit here because I've got two people who are working on my performance appraisal, even as we speak, who are in the room. So I'm supposed to tell you as moderators that all the presenters have no financial conflicts relationships to disclose. They all work for the federal government. They barely got a check coming, right, at this point. And you already know that I work for FAB, which is also not a conflict, but that's our disclaimer. We've gotten that done. So the National Voluntary Accreditation Program for Health Departments was initiated and co-funded by CDC and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And it's still, the development is still funded by those two partners, but they're not just funding partners. They are content experts for us as well, and they're good strategic thinkers with us, and you'll see some of that evidence today. FAB calls ourselves, and we believe in this philosophy, that we establish the standards for accreditation through a strong consensus-based process, and so we do have considerable practitioner input. Sometimes I'll get asked by a health department that doesn't know that, where do you come up with these standards and measures? And I'll say, from people just like you who serve on committees, and so if you want to affect that, you might want to let us know, and you can sign up for those. We did launch the program in September of 2011. And this was the map as of October 15th. We actually have 235 health departments who are somewhere in the process. Of course, we have 19 health departments that are accredited, and we will have a few more in a few weeks that will be reviewed by the accreditation committee that Dr. Archer also serves on. So what you see here in this map is the number of local, state, tribal. We actually have two tribal health departments in the system now. And for the centralized states integrated system, what you see is that is a group of health departments, local health departments that work, report to, and are subunits of a state health department who are going through the process all at the same time. So what you're going to here today is, as I said, an expansion on the focus of quality improvement and how our focus at FAB aligns nicely with programmatic expectations at CDC. So I'm going to introduce all three speakers, and then we'll just transition from one to the other. And then we'll let them all three finish, and then we'll have a Q&A time. So our first speaker is no stranger to most of you, Lutz Corso. Is with the Office of State, Tribal, Local, and Territorial Support at CDC. Liza is officially our project officer for FAB, but again, more than that, she has been with us every step of the way since FAB was first being conceived, I guess is a good word for it. Liza actually had a baby during that time herself, and it's a pleasure to watch Sam grow because Sam and Fab are about the same age.
First grade.
And we are learning about, like, Sam's learning. Every day is kind of a new day with a new experience. Liza's been with CDC since 2002, and she, of course, is the team lead not only for accreditation, but performance standards work. And before that, worked for NACHO, which is where I first met her, from 1994 to 2002. And there, she worked on the development of the MAP process. And I bet most of you in the room are familiar with that. So that was her baby before Sam was her baby. And of course, I met her as we started working on the National Public Health Performance Standards. And we're now in the third version.
Oh, yeah.
Of those. So our second speaker will be Andrea Young. Dr. Young is the Chief of Applied Systems Research and Evaluation Branch at OSTIL, the same office. These two guys are daily co-workers. Dr. Young leads a variety of applied research and evaluation projects. We've gotten to know her a little bit at FAB as we've looked at our evaluation, and as she's worked on the NIFI evaluation. She joined CDC in 2001, and she has a doctorate and a master's from the Department of Educational Research at Florida State. Anybody here from Florida? Yeah? And a bachelor's in sociology from Eckerd College. Our third presenter is Shauna Mercer. Dr. Mercer is the chief of CDC's Community Guide branch. How many of you are familiar with the Community Guide? Well, you're going to love this presentation. this is the preeminent source of evidence-based recommendations about effective community-based programs, services, and policies for improving health. Dr. Mercer does a lot of things. She's helped us in a lot of ways at FAB, but her work primarily focuses on engaging policymakers, practitioners, researchers, and evaluators in continuing to build, translate, and use the evidence base for community-based approaches. So I know you'll enjoy this panel. They've got a lot to share with you. So I'm going to sit down, and Liza, I believe you're starting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kay. And we do recognize an awful lot of folks in the room. So we put some of the slides that describe what the accreditation program is all about, but we certainly don't want to belabor this. How many folks are pretty familiar then with the accreditation? I'm seeing an awful lot of hands. So the standards, this is a slide that really represents some of the key elements that are part of the accreditation program. Not surprisingly, of course, standards and measures across 12 domains, 10 of which, of course, are the 10 essential public health services, and there are those on administrative capacity and governance. And, of course, those standards are the foundation that are used around assessing a health department, and that assessment process uses peer site visitors. As Kay mentioned, some of you are participating as site visitors, and I see actually a few accredited health departments in the room. So April and, how could I forget, actually, Rex, and I was looking at Terry, because even though you've retired, are there any others? But it's very exciting now that we actually have accredited health departments. So what we want to do today is focus a little bit on the connection with categorical programs. As Kay mentioned, we partner with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to support FAD, but we don't really stop there in regards to what we view our role with supporting accreditation. A lot of you, and I see a few folks from national partner organizations in the room, ASTO, NACHO, the National Network of Public Health Institutes, APHA, and I imagine you all know exactly what that acronym means, are all very playing very critical roles in supporting and technical assistance and supporting the field in accreditation readiness. But what you're going to hear today is going to focus on these last three bullets especially. That last bullet, building connections to CDC-supported areas and the categorical programs that really make up what public health is often viewed as, we think is going to be very instrumental in institutionalizing what accreditation is into the fabric of public health. And of course, that relates to establishing incentives for preparing for and, of course, for accreditation status. And of course, Andrea is going to be talking about how this connects with the NIFI program, National Public Health Improvement Initiative, and exactly what's being accomplished through that. So I'm going to start off with what we think is one of the more exciting accomplishments from CDC. How many of you have been direct grantees from CDC? I know there's a few locals, so that certainly some of you may have experience in responding to funding opportunity announcements. And if you've done that, you may have noticed in the past that they look different from program to program or unit to unit. That was identified as a real source of, or a real area for improvement, an opportunity for improvement for CDC. So that was a cross-CDC effort over the last several years to develop some standardized template and guidance that all programs and centers, institutes, and offices across CDC would be using for the domestic non-research FOAs, and that we developed a new template and guidance. As part of doing that, we actually were able to make a connection with FAB and with accreditation in that, which really operationalizes a real opportunity and connection with the standards. So let me tell you about that. But what I want to point you to is that link there, and of course you can get my slides to the system afterwards. That link is one of the FOAs that went out on this standard template and guidance, and this is from the STD area, if it's not obvious from the URL. That you'll see this language in there, so you can really see this. And this is, I really think this is impressive work. And I'm not saying that because I was instrumentally involved. I was actually only tangentially involved. I think this is a real accomplishment for CDC. So in the organizational capacity statement, there is an opportunity for applicants to describe their current status in applying for public health accreditation and or evidence of accreditation status, of course, that's the case. And FAB is particularly mentioned, of course. But even more valuable, perhaps, is the connection that was made in the budget narrative section. And I have the full language here simply because I think it's probably not worth paraphrasing this, but what we did is we used the Public Health Accreditation Board standards so that, and the connection with that, as a real opportunity to say if it's consistent with the statutory authority and, of course, how it connects to the intent of the FOA. If a health department sees an opportunity to say we need to meet certain standards and this relates to work that we may want to do, they can connect those. And that's, needless to say, going to really help to leverage all of those categorical investments that are made across CDC to help health departments use that funding in a more deliberate way toward meeting standards. And that's not just meeting the standards initially, but once health departments are accredited and they have their performance improvement opportunities from the site visitors and from the report that they get from FEB, they know areas that they're going to want to focus on, and they can actually share that as part of the work that they're doing and to say, we want to work in this area, and that aligns with these standards and also makes a lot of sense for what this FOA is all about, and that is double reason that they may want to actually do that work. And not only is this, of course, leveraging funds, of course, it raises awareness for the project officer across CDC in different categorical areas to really support that kind of work. So we think that's exciting, and we'll have a real opportunity across CDC. That started in October of last year, so we're now a year in, and we're going to be looking at that to really evaluate how that's being used among grantees and among programs. So that's one opportunity. But we're looking, of course, across programs and services to see where the connection is. So how can our programmatic activities help to meet FAB standards, but of course, how can those programmatic investments help to meet FAB standards? So that's one of those things that we're also, in addition to that FOA opportunity, which is a generic opportunity across the board, we're also really looking at that program by program. So I want to really tell you a little bit about that. Here's a bit of a laundry list of some of the programmatic and, for lack of a better word, strategic connections we've been trying to, that we've been, done some work on. And I'm going to, as I go through this, tell you a little bit about that. In building connections, and I'm kind of going fast because I figure we want lots of time for Q&A and, of course, for the other speakers. But in building connections, one of the areas that many of you probably have heard about from Kay is through think tanks and expert panels. And that has been a real opportunity for bringing key folks from the field and experts in certain areas, subject matter experts, to really think through the synergies and alignments and what might be the questions around certain hot topics or how do we drive future revisions of the FAB standards, all those kinds of questions that are really important to be thinking about. In many cases, those think tanks and expert panels have been in programmatic or topic areas that represent different slices of public health. And I'm not going to talk about all of these, but let me give you two different examples. Informatics, that's a fast-moving, fast-changing area of public health. When the FAB standards were first released, the version 1.0, there was a different sense of exactly what we could put in those standards that relates to informatics and information management, information science, and electronic health records, and all of those expectations of health departments. And so FAB has convened two informatics think tanks that has included representation from across CDC, as well as ASTO and NACHO, who of course are also very involved in this area, the Public Health Informatics Institute, many folks from the field that are really very instrumental in driving this. And that group has been really good about thinking about not just where it needs to go for 1.5, but what's that trajectory needs to look like for future revisions. And that, I think, is going to really help FAB and health departments know how that needs to evolve over time. Another example is environmental public health. That was probably the first think tank, or one of the very first think tanks, that was convened. The first one was, in fact, convened back, I think, before the beta test. So that was fairly early. And part of the reason that was pulled together was there were a lot of questions at that point about exactly what's the connection and how does environmental health, how does that look within the FAB accreditation standards and accreditation assessment process. And so by drawing in folks from the field who are environmental health directors, one of the outcomes of that was that there was a level of reassurance that, no, environmental public health is a very big part of this. No health department is going to get accredited without showing that environmental health is part of this. They also very much advised on glossary definitions and how that might look in certain standards and measures, and also helped FAB with a big push for getting environmental public health individuals involved as site visitors. At least one of the beta test sites, probably more, I know, was a public health agency that had environmental health separate. And so looking exactly at how that works was also a very important part of the process. By the way, I will mention that that's a picture from our chronic disease think tank that occurred just a couple days before the shutdown, quite frankly. So that was very good timing on FAB's part. Otherwise, it would have not had very good attendance from CDC. Another way that we're building connections is through crosswalks. And many of you know that there are standards and programmatic requirements and expectations and categorical areas. There's guidance documents. So one of the things that we have felt could be very helpful is to really think about where those standards and our expectations mesh up with the FAB standards. And one of the ways we like to characterize this are, where are the twofers? If you're going to do something and you're going to document it, where can you use that for FAB as well as for your project officer or for another set of programmatic standards? This is just an example of areas in which we've done a lot of work. You are going to hear about the Guide to Community Preventive Services, one at the end. I will also mention that little picture is from a website where there's an online version of the Baldridge FAB crosswalk. So you can find that online. And we're doing work in some of these other areas with the FEP capabilities, which preparedness capabilities from CDC. NATO has done some great work with Project Public Health Ready crosswalk with FAB standards. Some work that we've done very recently has been with the healthcare-associated infections. And that's in process right now. We're actually about ready to vet that with the field. But that is, of course, one of our winnable battles at CDC, so that's been a good area to get some attention in. I will also say that we are just, I think, doing the communications and awareness has a real impact and opportunity. Assuring that CDC project officers are aware of accreditation and understand the value. We know that a lot of field staff and fellows from CDC are involved in accreditation readiness. From OSTILTS, we have the Public Health Associate Program. Have any of you heard of the Public Health Associate Program? Okay. Do any of you have a PHAP fellow? And oh, great, that's good to see some hands on that one. So there we know that there are PHAP fellows involved with accreditation readiness. So how can that help to fill the gap on what we know is a real problem for health departments, which is that the more onerous time that's required at the front end of preparing for accreditation, that's, I think, been valuable. Using grantee connections, so doing webinars, and in a couple weeks I'll be speaking at the HAI, the Healthcare Associated Infections Grantee Meeting, about accreditation as one of the opening plenary pieces. So that's really seen as valuable. It's not as valuable when it comes from OSTILTS as it is when it comes from the people to actually get you the funding. So it really sends an additional message that this is something that you can use those categorical investments for. Another way, of course, that we're building connections and awareness is through the research and publications. I want to mention that in January of 2014, there will be a special issue on accreditation coming out in the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. I think I got that backwards. And that is their 20th anniversary issue, so that's exciting that it coincides with that. And that is a real opportunity to highlight the continuous improvement of the program and how there are some peer review manuscripts that talk about that, as well as some of the impact. And there's a link there, because that's not the only place where there's research about accreditation being published. Just earlier this month, the Journal of Environmental Health, and this is a link to a JEH manuscript, published an article that talks about the link between accreditation and PACE-EH, if you're familiar with that. That's an environmental health planning tool, and environmental health standards. So really thinking about how does this mesh up with things that are familiar to the different slices of public health. So I want to use my last minute or two to just dive in on emergency preparedness. I thought it would be helpful to go a little deeper on one as an example. This is one area that I mentioned we've had a think tank on. We've met in June of 2012, did a conference call in October, and then there will be another in-person get-together of this think tank in 2014. And this did include a variety of different representatives that have helped to inform where FAB's taking version 1.5 and, of course, the future. When you look at that second bullet, emergency operations plans, investigations, after-action reports, lab access, it's not surprising that there's a lot of interest and opportunity for thinking about what health departments need to do in preparedness and where that meshes up with FAB standards and measures. So there has been a huge opportunity for really looking at what are we expecting, we CDC expecting from our preparedness funding that goes to grantees, and that's measured through the Public Health Emergency Preparedness, FEP, capabilities. We did a fairly in-depth crosswalk between FAB and the FEP capabilities, but we took that and we actually did a network analysis of that, and I love this slide because it's a really nice, quickie visual that shows there are some great connections, and I realize you cannot see those numbers and you cannot see all the lines, but I just wanted to let you know that it's a really nice way that has been able to help highlight where there are some really great connections between certain standards. So the triangles represent the FAB standards, while the little circles represent the FEP capabilities. And you see bigger triangles on certain ones like 5.4, which is emergency response plans, and 8.2, which relates to workforce. And those that are familiar with the FEP capabilities know that there's a lot about workforce and training in the FEP capabilities. And then, of course, some other ones that have some fairly strong lines going to them relate to Domain 2, where there's a lot on surveillance and investigation. So it didn't give us any huge surprises. It did, however, highlight where there are opportunities for improvement and stronger connection, and it really is a good tool that preparedness coordinators can use to engage in the accreditation readiness activities of their own health departments. And we're continuing that work. This link that I share up here also represents some research on accreditation and preparedness that the North Carolina PERC Center has been able to do. They've been doing that for several years. Some of you may know that North Carolina has a homegrown, state-driven accreditation program for their public health departments that's more longstanding than FAB. And they were able to do some work on that to find that there's a statistically significant difference, for example, between those that were accredited and those that are not, and the H1N1 activities and emergency response activities of accredited health departments. So that certainly represents some of the opportunities and impact for accredited health departments. So with that, I'm going to move on because we certainly do not want to run out of time.